Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
So that noise that you just heard is called Reveille. Reveille is what we play on bass when it's time to wake everybody's dumbass up. Before you go on your morning run or before you go eat morning chow or breakfast or whatever you want to call it, they play Reveille. So welcome to Zero Blog 30, the podcast edition, where I'm going to be spending time every single week going over issues that are important to me, that are important to you, and getting our stories out. That's an important thing to do with the military generation that we have right now, because we've been serving and doing things since 2003, really, when we entered Afghanistan. And even before that, fuck, if you want to tell stories before that, I'm not going to cut it off just on the war on terror group. But even before that, we'll tell your stories too. And by stories, I don't necessarily mean just combat stories. Because yes, combat stories are important, and they shape the course of your life. Like they've shaped the course of my life, for sure. But I also want to tell the stories that are lighthearted, that are fun, that make us as the military community who we really are. And if you're not a military dude, listen too, man. You might learn something because we've been through some shit. We've seen some shit. And we also want to joke around about shit and balls and dicks and everything in between. Like, that's what life was like for us. And I want this to be to show that not everything in the military that you see has to be about placing flowers on graves and going to memorials and doing all this super sad stuff, because that's not who we are as a people. By and large, the military people that I know are happy. They like drinking beer. They like going to barbecues. They like going to baseball games. They like going fishing. They like going hunting. They like going to fucking poetry readings. They like going to musicals. They like everything and all things in between. And that's what I want to show this podcast is that when you talk about the military, you talk about America, it doesn't always have to be super reverent, because that shit gets old and it gets sterile and it gets stale. And there's enough of that. There's enough people that cover the sad stories of PTSD and 22 veterans every day kill themselves. And are those important issues? Absolutely, they are. And they're important issues to me, and I've talked about it on podcasts before. But that's not what I want this to be. Sure, I want to highlight the fact that 22 veterans kill themselves every single day, and that PTSD still runs rampant, and that seeking help oftentimes has a huge social stigma when you're in the military or when you're out of it. Seeking mental health makes you appear to be weak, and that's not the case. I do it, and I feel like I'm a pretty strong individual, and I want to share the stories of the strong individuals who are often funny as fuck. So that's what we're going to do. This is Zero Blog 30. Well, like I said, this is Zero Block 30, and Connor was with me last time, and he's back with me again, and we're really excited about the feedback that all you guys gave to us in the first episode. I guess it was the second episode you heard that. It was the pilot episode, but the first episode that we decided to release, and it just happened to come out early, and you guys caught the demo. All the positive feedback was awesome. It was really encouraging, and we're really excited about it. Don't you think, Connor?
No, that was absolutely 100% positive. It was really nice that everyone had so many nice things to say. Some constructive feedback, which we also appreciate, because we're certainly not perfect. Just keep listening, tell your friends, and we'll try to keep getting better for you guys.
Exactly.
It's the 300th episode here on Zero Block 30. And I was thinking this morning, whenever I was looking at my kids, they're eating breakfast, getting ready to go to school and all that, this kind of job is cool on multiple levels, but looking in the future, when I'm dead and gone, when I've passed away, when I'm old, my kids will be able to go back and listen to me run my mouth at least 300 times for an hour to hear stories about my life and things like that in our lives, really, and your kids will be able to do that too. I think that's awesome, like having a complete library of how I fought for the past 4 or 5 years, where you can look back at one of the a pivotal time in American history where you'll say, I wonder what my dad thought about that. Oh, well, I know exactly what he thought about that. He was fired up, or he was wrong, or he was this, or he was that. I think that's going to be something that's really, really cool.
And
yeah, no, it really will be. It's like it's basically a running journal, running diary, so to speak. And to hear the intimate thoughts of another person like that is a very cool medium.
Yeah, really neat that my kids will know I had a lot of sex and that I talked about my butthole a lot. So thank you, ZBT.
Mom was a drunk. Jeez.
Yikes, she was hammered again in that story. Anyway.
Mom, and then whenever they're trying to go to school and they're listening on their way to school or whatever, like, Mom can't give me this kind of shit. She was constantly late.
Yeah, but they're not going to know.
No, all right. But today we have 6 rounds in the magazine. Round number 1, we've made it 300 episodes. We're going to take a small look back on where we started, where we're at, and where we intend to go. We won't suck our own dicks too much, but we're going to have to talk about some of it because it is episode 300. That's
and
a pretty big one.
We did all get a couple ribs removed this weekend, so we are going to utilize sucking our own dick a little bit.
True. Shout out longtime stoolie Marilyn Manson.
Yes.
Round number 2, even though we've done 300 episodes, there's still some things we were supposed to do, but we never did, including some ad reads that I've missed along the way. Interesting enough, and not just for the purpose of this transition, we found a tweet thread from military folks who talked about training and what they were supposed to complete, and they skidded out like longtime stoolie Michelle Kwan. Kate, just off the top of your head, what are your favorite? Some of your favorite Michelle Kwan facts?
Oh, off the top of my head?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I guess it'd be like combining artistry and elegance with athleticism. You know, she won more than 40 championships, including a record-tying 9 U.S. titles. Kwan actually began skating at the age of 5, I think. She won her first competition 2 years later. Off the top of my head, in 94, she landed the alternate spot in the U.S. Olympic team. The following year, she's placing 4th at the World Championships. Even then, in 96, sporting a new, more grown-up look, she won her first U.S. World titles. After a growth spurt that added both height and weight, she finished to Tara Lipinski. 2nd to Tara Lipinski, if I'm remembering correctly, because I was very young back then. But if I'm recalling correctly, the U.S. and World Championships at 97. And then, 98, the Olympic Games in Nagano, Japan. She was gold medal favorite. She defeated Lipinski that year earlier. Lipinski won, but that's all right. She got silver. She captured a bronze medal.
All right, that's enough,
Kwan.
Kate. That's enough. I had no idea you were such a Kwan head.
I'm total Kwan head. Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, and then for round number 3, for the first time in Zero Blog history, we're going to head over to Slovenia to check out some news that would even make the most seniors of Lance Corporals happy. Melania Trump's statue was burned in her hometown. We got something for that. You don't just burn the First Lady's statue and get away with it. Round number 4, the oldest Marine Corps veteran celebrates their birthday this week. Guess how old they are. Cons, we'll start with you. How old do you think?
109.
Kate?
111.
No. Kyle?
115.
107.
Wow.
Kate, she is 107. And one of the first women who actually got to go to combat arms in World War II. We're going to talk about her story in round number 4. Round number 5, Danny Trejo joins the show, which might not make sense, but it actually totally makes sense because he's feeding tons of unhomed veterans, and he's basically like every gunnery sergeant I've ever had. He looks rough and tough, but he's a big old teddy bear despite the tattoos and reputation that precedes him. And finally, round number 6. Over the last 300 episodes, we've changed a lot from the beginning. We aren't the only ones. The Army has changed too, or it is going to change. It's going to be a little kinder and gentler, folks. Kinder and gentler.
Hooray.
They're changing up basic training, which is going to make Kate happy. Nobody's getting yelled at anymore, which doesn't make me happy. I love it when people get yelled at. You won't get yelled at if you're stomping around in your Rocky boots, though, because those bad boys are very compliant in the Marine Corps. You're not going to get lifed out like I did walking the Camp Fallujah, and a master gunnery sergeant asked me what the fuck are on my feet because I was just wearing some, what are those shoes? Some other kind of shoes. So there's some hiking shoes. They weren't even like boots. They were low tops, and I got to wear them because I was with recon. It was awesome, but I still got yelled at by a master guns because that's what's important in combat is the boots that you wear on your feet. Rocky Boots build boots for men and women that serve and protect our country, designed and built for the U.S. for each individual branch of the military. Most recently, Rocky, side-by-side with the Marine Corps, has developed a very compliant boot. That's their jungle boot. It's the tropical boot. They have the little two holes that let your little feet breathe. That's important so you don't get them blisties. These boots are flash and water resistant and made from a 1,000 generic Cordura, which is extremely durable. Everybody knows what that is.
If you can't say it, it's good.
You're right. That's how you know the technology is on point. Not only does Rocky make the best boots for our service members, they also make boots for the times between service. Like this weekend, I was out there building some stuff, riding around in my lawnmower, pulling dirt, and doing all that stuff with my Rocky boots. I love them things. And as I wear them, they get more and more comfortable. You're going to find that out for yourself when you go to RockyBoots.com. Enter the promo code ZBT at checkout and receive 25% off your next pair. And you need that money off because I know you. I know you. If you're listening on active duty, they're doing your tax payroll deferment until January. You think you're rich. You're going to be fucking poor in January when you're paying double taxes. You don't want to have, you need to save as much money as you need to. But if your boots are looking rough, you need to go to RockyBoots.com and the promo code ZBT at checkout. You're going to get all that. Let's get started with the 300th edition of ZBT. Because I think it is important. 300 is a ton of episodes. It really, I wish we could go back and see how many hours. I would bet some were a little bit short of an hour. Some are well over an hour. I would bet we were recorded on this show 500 hours or so.
That sounds about right. It's crazy.
At least, I would say. At very least. I bet our longest episode is probably almost 3 hours. Because we've had a couple where we've really rambled it up.
Oh, yeah. Big time rambling. And that's kind of where I wanted to start. Because ZBT, whenever I first started working at Barstool, when Dave hired me, he didn't even know that I was a Marine. Like, he didn't know any of that stuff, didn't know that I was a Purple Heart recipient. When he found out after he hired me and we came to agreement on like terms and things like that, he said, all right, well, we're going to start you out on August 1st will be your official start date just because it's easier on payroll. And I said, that's fine, payroll stuff for August 1st, but I'd actually like to do it on July 31st, which is my alive day. I would like to have that. And he said, well, he's like, what's an alive day? I said, well, I got shot in the battle of in Fallujah, and so I would like to have that. And he was like, wait a minute, you got shot? This is incredible. He was acting like it was the best news of all time. Yeah. He had no idea that I was a Marine. He thought that I worked at NFL Network and CNN and Blogspot, because that's what was in my bio at the time. And so I got hired at Barstool without them really knowing anything about my military career at all, which was something that I was happy about, because I never would have wanted to think that I got hired just because of my military background. And in fact, when I first started there, I was like looking at different podcasts, and I don't know if I've ever talked about this from the beginning, but Dave thought that I was going to be his co-host on the Dave Portnoy show. Like, we had talked about that, where I was going to be on his show and like kind of lead the conversation there, and then he was going to be on there too. That ended up being Caleb and Roan. But I decided after a while I was going to do something military related, because at the time that I got hired at Barstool, PFT and Dan hadn't even launched Part of My Take yet. It wasn't even a thing. And when I found out about that, that's what I was kind of known for on the internet, was sports satire. And I thought, well, if Big Cat and PFT are going to do this, sure as shit, I can't do the same exact thing at the same company against those two guys. They're pretty damn good at it, mm-hmm. So I'm not going to go against them. So I said, maybe I will go to my wheelhouse. And the initial thought of ZBT was I was going to host a show, and I was just going to bring on everyday military people, and we were going to talk about their experiences and things like that. We often give Cons credit for being the first guest, but it was actually a Submariner who was the first one. I interviewed him. The audio was shit, so I couldn't release it. So, Cons, I actually went back this morning and looked at some of our initial
I can't believe you found these. I can't believe you found these. I mean, I remember having this conversation. I remember you sent out a tweet, and that is the reason I slid in those DMs and said, hey, I'm a veteran. I have some stories. And at that point, I had done the podcast with Dan and with Clem, and then later with another guy. So I had a little podcasting experience, but I didn't respond to your DM thinking, this is my shot. Now I'm going to become a podcast host for real and have a real cool show. None of that occurred to me. It was just, hey, are you a veteran and have a story? So that's why I slid in your DMs.
Yeah, and so I kind of laid out before we recorded, and this was August 18th of 2016. I kind of laid out to Cons what I was thinking that it was going to be. It was just going to be about humanizing veterans. It wasn't going to be insane war stories every single week, because that's not what the military is for 99% of us. It's everyday life job that you happen to maybe have a gun, maybe not. You're not even allowed to walk around most of the time with it loaded. So we didn't want to talk about just crazy-ass war stories all the time. So I kept, Cons and I went back and forth. I actually told him, this is something that came up with Dan Pfeiffer whenever we interviewed one of the hosts from Pod Save America. And he said, why didn't you guys name it Zero Pod 30? And I acted like it was the first time I had heard that phrase. Going back this morning, I had it right there in my DMs where I was thinking about naming it. I said, exactly. I think that this is going to be great. I'm going to call it Zero Pod 30.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And so Khan said, I completely agree. I think that's awesome. And what you're going to do is great. And that's great. And I said, or Zero Blog 30. Not sure yet. Well, Zero Blog 30, I remembered it triggered my memory after reading that. I had that idea because I wanted to drop the podcast every night that we were going to release at midnight. Like that was going to be when we dropped. And I wanted it to be like, because Feidelberg had Barstool Confessions. I wanted it to be like the military version of that. When we dropped the blog, military members would go in and talk to each other on the comments there in the blog. Terrible idea. That never happened.
That's a great idea. Great idea. But, you know, Zero Blog 30 rolls off the tongue a little better than Zero Pod. I'll say it. ZBT is better than ZPT. It rolls.
But is that just because we've been saying ZBT the whole time?
Yes.
If we had been saying ZPT, would that have sounded better? I don't know.
Yes. And so by the way, I'm looking through the text. Cons wanted to name it the Army Football Show.
Yeah, that was so rough.
I'm glad that didn't work out.
So Cons and I got together and we ended up making the episode. And it's kind of wild looking back because Cons and I didn't do rounds like we do now. Like at the top of the show, I read off six rounds, six things that we were going to talk about. Even when Kate first came on board, we didn't do that. We just kind of, Cons and I would be like, what do you want to talk about? Let's talk about Kaepernick, guns, and maybe some micropenis stories. I was like, okay. So then we would just ramble essentially for an hour and that's where we would go. So Cons and I started the show. Riggs later on came from Foreplay Pod. You might know him from Foreplay Pod. He was just getting his feet wet at Barstool whenever this happened. And he was our news guy, right, Cons?
Yes, that was interesting to have Riggs. Because originally when Riggs joined Barstool, he was writing political articles and he was the politics guy. So it made sense. Oh, he'd probably be good as the news guy. And he wasn't, Foreplay had not been created at that point. So he had plenty of time. So I remember I would just like walk in, grab him. He didn't even know the stories we were talking about a lot of times. Maybe we'd give him a little bit of a heads up. And he came in and he did a great job. But I think what's interesting is that you never just said like, hey, can you be my co-host? I came on the first episode to tell a story about one of my soldiers. We ended up talking about these other topics. It went well. You posted that. You said, hey, do you have time the following week? I did that for the first 3 weeks. And then the fourth week, if you remember, you came up to Barstool and we were interviewing Rob O'Neill for the first time and you're introducing the episode and you said, and I got Cons with me, and you didn't tell me you were going to say this. You said,
I didn't even ask.
No, you didn't ask either. You didn't ask if I was available, if I wanted to. You just said, I got Cons with me again. And, I think Cons is just going to be my co-host. And I said, oh, okay.
Okay. That's how that worked out. So Cons and I went on for a while. And then Kate, I also went back to Kate and I's first conversations. And Kate's first DMs, and now looking back at Kate's, well, both of yours, the personalities that you have and like the relationships that we have really remained the same from the get-go, from the very beginning conversations. Yeah. So Kate's first interaction with me was she posted a blog or she posted a video or a picture of a calzone, right, Kate?
Yeah, I was going to community college and working at the convention center down in Philly, and I stopped on my lunch break to get a calzone. It looked like a vagina. I posted it. It even had a little glitterous pepperoni button on it. It made me laugh. So I posted it, and immediately this guy named Chaps that I'd heard of Barstool, but I didn't follow. And this guy named Chaps retweets it, and it blows up. And I had, to get, three likes on a tweet was a huge deal for me at the time. So I was like, what the fuck's up with this guy? And then Chaps DM'd me and was like, hey, can I use your vagina calzone in a blog? And I was like, Sure, but I had questions. So this is what I wrote to Chaps. I was like, me, vagina-shaped food. You, can I use in blog? Everyone, LOLOL. Me, okay, that's funny, but does this guy have a popular vagina-shaped food blog or something? What am I missing? I didn't even realize you were associated with Barstool. I just thought you had your own blog where anything that looked like genitals got the spotlight, and that's what you were known for. And then immediately, instead of replying, you just sent me three other blogs where is this pumpkin trying to get the pipe? Is this, like, tree trying to fuck? Is this whatever? And I was like, I loved it. I just replied with a lot of laughter, and that was it.
Yep. Okay. And so then I found out later on that Kate worked at Duffel Blog and she wrote there some and things like that. So I invited her on to the show. And at the end of our interview, I had seen Kate's Twitter. And so I thought, you know, maybe she would want to do social media for us. And I invited you on and you immediately were like, yeah, and started doing it right away and changed really, I would say, the outward personality of the show. Because before we did have like funny videos of somebody mishandling a weapon, but you changed the way that we did social media and like the outward appearance of the show completely. So then next thing you know, you become a co-host too. Like we were just, it just happened like that. You yeah. became a co-host and then we went on to do the Chaps and Kate show and all that. We've had a bunch of producers along the way, four or five. How many do you think we've had, Cons? I know we had Wisco to start.
Wisco. Then there was Reed. Wasn't Bren right after Reed?
I think so. And Bren was with us for a super long time, and he did a great job and went on to go with Barstool Game Time to help grow that. Then we brought in Kyle about a year ago, right, Kyle?
Yeah, April of 2019, I started doing the social for you guys, and then April of this year, I started producing the show.
Yeah, because that was when we brought in Kyle. It was when we were really against the CBS show, The Code.
Oh, yeah.
Hard at The Code. And Kyle had the initiative and the good judgment to start a parody, The Code, Twitter account. And I saw that and I was like, this is you, right? Like, this is pretty damn funny. Why don't you come on our team? And he was happy to do it. And now he's a full-time producer, does all the different assets, and he does long-time toolies and things like that. So it's really grown in that area as well. But our goal from the beginning, even when we were interviewing people like Kyle Carpenter, Rob O'Neill, Dakota Meyer, Stanley Rubin, some of our favorite ones along the way, like Brian Wood, whose story of the Battle of Danny Boy made me pace around my house for like 2 hours. If you mm-hmm. haven't listened to that one, it's incredible. Like, it's a modern day story that reads like it's a World War II type of thing. It's unbelievable. So we've had all these stories, but the main purpose of the show has been the same. We're the same. We're very much the same as all the other Barstool podcasts, where our goal is to be funny. But at the same time, it is a little bit different because we realize that a lot of times in subjects that we're going to talk about, it really is legitimately life and death situations, right, guys?
Yeah. Yes. So sometimes it's hard to be like, hey.
Hey, we killed Soleimani. He deserved it.
Right. So thank
you. And you know, it might have impact on our friends or people that we served with, still people who are still in, or people that we know of, or just people in general. They are dealing with huge issues, and we talk about that. It's a lot different than did this guy make a putt,
right
it's exactly like, and yeah. I think we, and you know what, the other thing, we never sat down, Traps, at the beginning and said, you know what else would be great is if we became a podcast that talks about mental health a lot. That was something that, just like everything else here, I think, on the show, it all just kind of happened organically.
It kind of just slowly happened as it came out that we are all insane.
Yeah. We're like, what'd you do this week? Well, I went to therapy again.
I lost my car again, by the way. Speaking of, I did.
Yeah, Kate texted us yesterday and said, guys, I think my car got stolen. I was parked on the illegal side of the street. I think it's really gone. I went to the NYPD website and they said, nope, hadn't been towed. I think somebody looked at my CRV and was like, I gotta have it.
I was wrong. It got towed.
Yeah.
Chaps, can I ask you a question? Can you imagine if your initial thought was, hey, I'm going to have all these different veterans come on and tell their stories. Imagine trying to get 300 guests. As we know now what it takes to organize a guest and put a guest together and put the interview together. Can you imagine doing that every episode?
No. And the time, I like having guests on the show. Like, Danny's going to be awesome. Like, I think that that's going to be great. I love having guests on the show, but it is a pain in the ass to get guests and like the certain times of the day that you got to put aside and like, oh, I can't do this. I got to do an interview. It's nice just to sit down with us four and just shoot the shit and see what's going on in the news. Those are my favorite shows, even though we've been lucky enough and I'm very thankful for all the people that have joined as guests. But I love just sitting down and just bullshitting through the stories. That's what I think people like on the show. And that's what we continue to do. And that's what we're going to do as we move forward. And I'm just excited that we've had the opportunity to have 300 shows. Thanks to Dave and Erica and all the rest of the bosses that we have at Barstool Sports, who I don't believe have listened to an episode since like episode 3. That's okay. They trust us to our own devices. I think that this show proves like what you want to write on a fitness report whenever you're going up for a higher level promotion, that they look at this show and they're like, they need little to no supervision. That's what they think. I'm not sure if that's accurate or not.
They set out the JJ did tie buckle and they said, do this on your own. Key is initiative.
Tie your own damn buckle.
Take the initiative. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so that's what we're going to do for the next 300 shows, I guess. And luckily, there is news organizations like Military.com and Task and Purpose and Stars and Stripes and AP and Military.com and all those other ones that we use constantly. I want to thank all the journalists that work their asses off there to find the actual stories that we kind of opine about. And it takes a lot of the, I guess, responsibility off our back. If we report something wrong, a lot of times, not our fault. It was their fault.
Oh, totally. Exactly. Totally. So, or that, no, it's our fault.
I personally am going to start blaming Hope Sec. If anything goes wrong, just give it to Hope Sec. Be like, we read it from Hope's people. I don't know what's going on. Totally, we can't be held accountable.
Not me yet, not so. Reading it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Hope is awesome. Make sure you follow her on Twitter, Hope Sec. She's great. All right, so there is certain things that we were supposed to do. Like I mentioned, ad reads. And that's what we're going to talk about in round number 2. In military training, there are things that you just have to do. Like, if I know that you're a Marine, like Kyle, for instance, Kyle's Marine Staff Sergeant. I know for a fact he can swim. I know for a fact he can shoot. I know for a fact that at some point in his career, he ran pretty fast and did some pull-ups. I know that just off the jump. There's other things that you just assume. Like, if you're in the Army, you should have thrown a grenade at some point in your career. Might be just one time. Maybe just once. But you've thrown a grenade, right, Cons?
Yes, I've thrown a bunch of grenades. But also, most people, there is a training set aside to, it, as you said, at least do it one time.
I threw mine on the 4th of July.
Did you?
Yeah, I only ever threw one, and it was on the 4th of July.
I love throwing grenade training. I think I only did it, like, twice. And throwing a grenade, one, you feel like that even if you were a good athlete, like I played baseball growing up, I could throw. You might not believe it after watching my video of me throwing out the first pitch at the Jumbo Shrimp game. Yikes. I was just trying to toss it up there. I actually thought about it while I was standing on the mound. I want to chunk this motherfucker into the stadium. Like, I just want to throw it into the stands as far as I can. That's what I was thinking, so I went the other way and just kind of noodled it out there. But even if you can throw, when you have a grenade in your hand, there's this sense almost like you're dreaming where, you know, like if you're running in a dream, your feet barely move. You're like, what if I do fuck this up and I can't throw it? Or if I happen to drop a throw for the first time in my life, what happens then? I'm dead.
Of all the jobs in the military, the one I would never want is to be the MCT instructor who has to be there with all the boots, grenade after grenade after grenade. Because we've all seen the videos where people up, they panic, and then they throw it right into the wall, and the instructor has to take them and dive on top of them. Fuck no. I would never want that job.
You would think that this is something that you would want to do. Like, if you look at throwing a grenade, if you ask any civilian, would you like to come out and throw a grenade? I would bet 95% of people who are, like, any type of athletically, like, inclined at all would say, yes, I would love to throw a grenade. That would be incredible. Throwing a grenade in the military, one of the worst things you could do.
Yeah.
It's just terrible. Like, the rules and safety that set in place, which need to be in place, make the things that you would have as a hobby, it makes it terrible. Like shooting guns, for example. Shooting guns, if I told you before you were joining the military, hey, dude, you, for every year that you're in, you, if you're going to join the Marine Corps, every single year that you're in, you're going to take 1 week out, and the only thing you're going to do for your work day is go shoot. How does that sound?
Sounds pretty good.
That sounds great. It's terrible. It's the worst thing. It's the worst week in the Marine Corps. Kate, do you agree?
Crack of dawn. Fucking ambulance going by. Crack of dawn. Yeah, it's freezing cold. You're getting yelled at. Blah, blah, blah. It's never, it's not like the movies. It's not like Rambo, it turns out. What? Now, if the weather's nice and you're in the groove, you actually do enjoy it in the afternoon session, I would say. But other than that.
Now, there is one spot that I did enjoy it. That's at Quantico. If you go to Quantico and you go out to shoot, make sure you go out in late April. If you go out late April, whenever you go piss in the tree line, there's all kinds of blackberries out there that you can enjoy.
So you're saying basically, though, there's all sorts of stuff in the military that seem awesome, we're supposed to do it, and then you don't always get to do it, or it's not always as cool as you think it is. And this idea came to us because of a tweet that you saw by Steve Morrison. And he said, I have 14 years of service and have never thrown a hand grenade. Is there something common in the military that you've never done? And some of the answers were really great. I don't know, Chaps, if you want to go through some of them. They were pretty good.
Yeah, there's a guy named Joe who said, I never went down the rappel tower in basic training. I was terrified at heights, and when I saw nobody was paying attention, I just walked over to the line of soldiers who were done. And I thought, when I saw that, I thought back to my, like, yeah, dude, like, you could totally do that.
Very easily.
It's almost like, you know, our worldview often involves you think that people care what you're doing. No one cares what you're doing for the most part. Like if you're eating alone at a restaurant, the first time you do it, you're like, oh man, people are looking at me. No one gives a fuck that you're eating chicken wings and ranch by yourself. No, not at all.
And that E6 running that rappel tower, there's a better than good chance he's hungover, so he's not really paying attention to anything. So he doesn't even want to be there. So if you just scoot over to the side, he doesn't give a shit.
Further than that,
they want to be done. They have to do 300 people. And if a couple of you do skipsies, no one's going to care.
They can care less.
That's a few minutes earlier.
Dan Hogan said, I've never saluted a four-star general. I saluted a lieutenant general when I was a young specialist, but I've never seen a four-star in person. Yeah, you can go your whole career and not see a unicorn four-star. In hindsight, I don't think I ever did either, to be honest.
Yeah, we talked about that a couple weeks ago whenever – or maybe it was just in the DMs where there was a general that was replaced to, I think it was at Fort Hood, right? Like where they were trying to make sure that the command climate changed. And I told Cons, I'm like, I don't think that anybody below E7 gives the first fuck who the commanding general of a base is. There's bases that I was at that I knew their name because I saw it on a nameplate every time you walk into a building. But other than that, if I saw him with civvies on or her with civvies on, I would not know who they are. And I don't care who they are. They don't affect me at all.
It's like
Bigfoot.
Ours on Pendleton had very distinctive hair. She was a woman. And, well, she was at least the highest ranking. She was either like a 2-star or a 3-star. And I saw her texting and driving once. And I said,
Did you report that?
What's her name? Dime her out.
I'm not going to dime her out, but I knife handed her from my little, from my Sonata passing.
Hey
lane.
There,
I said,
ma'am.
Hey, ma'am.
I know you're fucking wrong. How about that?
Good, good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The only time I ever cared was when I was in Iraq and it was, Secretary General Mattis was in charge. He was the lieutenant general that was in charge of the theater at the time. But I had no clue because I was in Okinawa. I wasn't a Camp Pendleton Marine. So I had no idea who Mattis was at the time. I heard stories after that. They're like, oh, yeah, Mattis might be coming through the meeting. I was like, who's that? And they're like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like Camp Pendleton Marines acted like you had just shit down their neck if you didn't know who Mattis was.
Well, this one absolutely blew my mind by Hamel Karenina at Hamel Karenina. 10 years of service and I've never sat in, much less started a Humvee. It's by sheer happenstance that I know about the key thing. There's always this joke, go get me the Humvee keys. There's no Humvee keys. That you literally don't need any key to start it. That said, I'm qualified to drive a 6,000-ton warship. So I feel like there's plenty who can't say that.
See, I love this because it is that caveat, like, I don't know about a Humvee, but I do know some shit. Yeah. I know some shit.
Yeah.
Oh, but this makes a little sense. I think she said she was a sailor. So
yeah.
The Navy, they don't really have Humvees. So that makes a lot of sense. I believe that. If she was in the Marines in the Army, I'd be saying, hey, you're stolen Valor, Katie. But this makes sense.
And yeah. I think because we have three Marines on the show and an Army guy, I think that we have that going on for us, that we forget what life is like for the Air Force and the Navy. When I got out of boot camp, I had already shot more times in boot camp than my dad, who did 20 years in the Navy, ever did. He never fired a weapon in his entire career. And I found that to be insane. He carried a pistol, never fired it. Even in training, he never fired it.
And this... I think it speaks to the fact that a lot of people paint military with the same brush. They're all so similar. All of our experiences, especially among them, are so wildly different that it really, truly is. Like, everybody's experience is so different. At A-Money 30 said she took her 12 years before she even saw a tank moving for the first time.
I don't think I ever saw one.
That's another one. I saw them on the beach of Camp Pendleton, but that was it, yeah.
But that's another one. Depending on what branch, what branch of the Army you're in, it's very plausible that you would never see a tank.
Yeah.
Like Bradleys and ATVs and stuff like that, I would see those, but never saw an actual tank. Like Kyle put on our social media channels this week, the helicopter tank. I never saw that.
Never saw a helicopter. Speaking of, at Capitom17 said, never rode in a Blackhawk before. Got real close once, but they switched out to a Chinook. A ton of military folks have never get to ride in a helicopter, any sort of helicopter at all.
Well, every helicopter to me is a Blackhawk.
Same. So I've ridden
if you've ridden in a helicopter, you've ridden in a Blackhawk.
I was in three different kinds, but I couldn't tell you what any of those kinds were. I just know.
I think I was in a CH-53. Maybe 47.
I was
I
in a
know.
Big one, a little one, and one where I could see out the back really good, and that's all.
Kyle, you're an air wing guy, right? Weren't you in the air wing?
No, kind of. We didn't have planes or anything. I was in the LAD battalion. So they,
That reminds me. Uh-oh. I need to say this now. It is very important. It is imperative.
I bet it's
300
not.
Episodes. I think some folks in the military know who we are. And as much as this pains me to say this, I'm going to say it anyway. Blue Angels, Thunderbirds, you need to give us a ride. Okay?
Yeah.
You need to give us a gosh darn ride. That
yeah,
we deserve
I was never
at
in a jet
point.
Plane. I was never in a jet plane.
Never been in the Thunderbirds or the Blue Angels. It's time to right that wrong.
But if you let me fly and I'm in the back of the F-18, like being Goose, you got to give me the aux. I want to pick the songs that we're listening to while we're up there.
I agree.
I would make the... Listen, pilots, if you take me up, I swear to God, I'll make the best music playlist you've ever heard. I think my most proud moment, or my moment when I like fist pump on social media, was when it was a legit F-18 fighter, was flying from California to Hawaii. And he posted a picture with his helmet on, and he had ZBT like on his phone, and the caption was something like, listen to ZBT while I'm bored. And I thought, dude, you're in an F-18. If you're bored,
put
do
on
Alanis
Morissette, for Christ's sakes. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, just flying an F-18, how could you possibly get bored? But as a caveat to the one that I saw a tank move on the first time, somebody with the username I Am Grandpa, which is a fantastic name, said, went to basic training at Fort Knox in 1987. My entire platoon was almost run over by a column of tanks leaving the field. They went down the wrong road, and we all went in the ditch like two lines of synchronized swimmers entering the pool. Now, that's funny. I agree. Like, if that's something that you saw, and that's – if you're an NCO or if you're a drill instructor there, drill sergeant there, and you have the opportunity to make all of your troops dive into a ditch and it's a real-life training thing, you relish in that moment.
Oh, yeah, especially because they all didn't get run over. That's key.
All right, so we'll do one last one, and this is my favorite one. This might be the most unbelievable – I can't believe that this happened ever.
Mm-hmm.
This guy named Participation Trophy, Cycling Ute 22, said, I never smoked, drank, got a divorce, or a high interest rate vehicle.
I did the first three.
Unbelievable. How could you not smoke, drink, or get a divorce? I mean, that, to me, you didn't really serve. If you never did any of those, you didn't serve.
Your service doesn't count. It's the full human experience.
Trophy.
Full human experience of a troop is to make all these mistakes, and if you're not doing it,
yeah, and
like
Kate, I'd go so far as to say all your run-ins with your vehicle, that would count now. It's similar to a higher interest rate vehicle. That's basically the same level of maturity, all of the problems you have.
Part of me struggling with my car, because my car is really the only way. I think that's how I stay connected to my Lance Corporal roots. I think that's how I'm afraid to let the military go, and that is the way it manifests itself, is not being able to keep track of my vehicle.
Because I had my truck stolen recently, so right. I know the process very well. When the police officers come, they ask you, was there anything of value? I like to imagine Kate being like, yeah, there's a pork roll sizzly that I was planning on getting to in like a week or two. Yeah. There is still some styrofoam balls. Like the first time Kate picked me up from an airport, was it your niece that had left like a beanbag in there and it exploded?
I got my goddaughter a beanbag for Christmas one year, and it came with all these extra beans. And I was like, her mom was like, please don't leave this enormous plastic bag of extra beans in this house with three kids. So I always kept them in my trunk. And whenever I rolled through to their house, I'd be like, hey, you need a bean refill? I was like my little bean tank that I kept in the back of the car. Well, it exploded one day. So driving my car with the windows down was like being inside a snow globe for like 2 years. Fun. For 2 years, it was like that. So I pick up Chaff from the airport. I'm like, hold on, it's about to get real snowy in here. Yeah, so it's always so they're still in there. There's still little beads all over that car.
Yeah, there's got to be a couple. And good on her for saying that, because whenever I was little, it was either me or my sister. I can't remember. The stories fade together. We had to go to the doctor and like the emergency room to get one of those beanbag things removed from her nose. Like,
oh, yeah.
It was so far up her nose that they had to like dig in there with a big old thing and rip it out.
Oh, yeah. Those beans get everywhere, man. For sure.
Big time. All right. That's that story. Let's move on to round number three. Kate, what do we got there?
Round number three, in the grand tradition of Celeron, New York's Scary Lucy statue. Have you guys ever seen that?
No.
There is a statue of, you know, I Love Lucy, Lucille Ball.
Mm-hmm.
And the town did the unveiling, and it is the most... You know when I Love Lucy makes that wah face? And
yes.
It's like that, but it's melted, and she just looks like this. It became famous for how hideous it is. And, like, Lucille Ball's family is supposed to be like, oh... Thank you. Ah, yikes. It's hideous. And the Cecilia Jimenez restoration of the 200-year-old Ecce Homo painting. Who's writing this article that people are going to know what the fuck these things are? Yeah,
you got to keep it relevant there. Like, Cecilia. The classic Ecce Homo.
Right. Yes, of course. Anyways, Melania Trump's hometown in Slovenia just revealed a new statue of America's first lady. So going off those first two, it's your clue that not going to be the best statue.
You know what they should have said? Like what? Ronaldo's recent statue.
Yes,
that he
thank you. Yes. And there was another football. There's like an NFL player, too, that their statue was like, yikes.
David Beckham's was really bad, too. There was like a YouTube thing. I think it was James Corville or some shit like that did his, and it was really bad, too.
Oh, yeah. So according to the BBC, a new statue in Sevnica, Slovenia, is actually a replica of the old one, which was carved from a live linden tree by a local pipe layer, Ales Maxi Zupzevk, using a chainsaw. The original.
See, I think they should cut him a little slack there. If you're carving anything with a chainsaw, that's difficult. And if he's just like a local artisan that's just out there and be like, you know what? I'm going to whip together a 26-foot statue made out of wood just using this chainsaw. You can't go on the internet, especially not the BBC. That might be the most widely read website in the entire world. That you can't do that to him. He doesn't deserve that.
If you get it even just remotely close to what you're trying to do with a chainsaw, you get credit from me.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. He's busy laying pipe. He doesn't have time to work with wood. You know what I mean? Whoa, the original.
Shout out J.R. Smith.
Indeed. The original artwork was commissioned by 39-year-old American artist Brad Downey to look like Melania Trump in the blue coat ensemble she wore on Inauguration Day back in 2017. Downey says people thought the sculpture falls short of a description of her physical appearance. Right, because the original statue of her looked like just a blue block with some lines cut in it.
It looks like one of those Easter chocolate bunnies just with a blue dress on.
Well, local Slavs described it as Smurfette or a disgrace, and it was burned.
Is it a blue dress or a white dress? Sorry.
It was a blue dress, and it was burned down by an unbeknownst arsonist on July 4th, 2019. And it sounds like they didn't burn her statue in her hometown because they hate her. It sounds like they burned it because they hated the statue so much. Well, unfortunately for them, they got a replica of that old statue, but just newer and more poorly done by the pipe fitter with a chainsaw. The new one erected is just a duplicate made of bronze, which is much less flammable, but a little rough nonetheless.
Yeah, thanks for pointing out that bronze is less flammable than wood.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. Melania, she was born in Novo Mesto, Yugoslavia, but spent her childhood in nearby Sevnica. The town has become a tourist destination for Slovenians and Americans who want to know more about the First Lady. President Trump also boasted a large wooden statue in Slovenia in a town called Sela pri Kamniku. It was made of wood and stood 26 feet high in a pose that echoed the Statue of Liberty. But that too was burned to the ground by an unknown arsonist, not before locals drove a tractor into it. So who knows?
That's hysterical. That's a hysterical visual. Just revving up the tractor and you're just plowing right into it. That's
I feel
great.
Like Slovakia, Slovenia. Oh my God, are those two different countries? Slovakia and yeah. Slovenia? Oh my God.
Very much so.
I'm so sorry to the. I'm so sorry. I need to do my geography better.
Apology accepted.
Thank you. But Slovenia, I feel like though, any of the Enias. They don't fuck around. They don't mince
words.
Yeah,
if you're in anything that used to be part of the USSR, you got to take it seriously there. But to these people's credit, it sounds like a lot of these towns are small little farming villages that we've seen the dangers of wildfires of what's happening in Oregon and California. Mm. If you have a 26-foot wooden statue that I imagine is placed in the middle of concrete, like where there's nothing but concrete, nothing else is flammable, in my opinion... 26-foot tall wood, you gotta burn it.
You gotta
I don't care
see,
who it
right?
is. You gotta burn that fucker down. You
it's
just
like
got.
A campfire.
What else are you doing in Slovenia? You gotta burn stuff.
Bring the mallows. Bring the marshmallows over. I also think too, like there could be so many reasons. Maybe they hate Trump, or maybe they're like you said, a small town who's like sick of tourists coming through to check it out. They're like, oh, these little blah blah blah. That's how they sound.
Some old man who's a donut baker who's just sick of all these tourists running amok.
You're right. That's a horrible thought. I have no idea. I just feel like it's a Eastern Europe just doesn't fucks around. They
don't.
They'll just burn shit. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why people always say Melania looks mad everywhere she's at. Like, no, she's just from a Slovak state.
Exactly.
Like just how right. it's just their face.
Exactly.
I got to be honest. I don't know that I've ever actually said this out loud, but I just need to know more of the dynamics of how her and President Trump. Got together and what the attraction was there and if she actually
he has $1 billion. I think that's
that has to be it, right? It has to just be the money. I mean, it's just ridiculous to me when you see those two together.
No shit. And this segment of no shit cons
He owns a place on Fifth Avenue. I think.
Yeah.
I think that. I mean, that to me, that's a pretty good getter. Like we say that if you have like a high level military accolades and things like that, you could talk about that at a bar and likely pull some dick, right, Kate?
Absolute.
not just butt cheeks, but you can pull some dick too. I think that that's the case. You're a billionaire. You're getting cheeks. Just
and by the way. Yeah. In September 1998, that's when she met him at a party and they began dating while he was in the process of divorcing Marla Maples. And then she was still doing her modeling career. He was doing his thing. And then the couple gained attention after a lewd interview with shock jock Howard Stern. They appeared together while Trump campaigned for the 2000 Reform Party. And then... they've been together ever since. So they started dating.
Yeah,
okay,
people
then.
Do forget that.
People
I think we also forget that Marla Maple sounds like a character from Harry Potter.
Mm. Makes me want a cookie.
Yeah. All right, let's move into an interview with somebody very different from that. No, not the interview. Sorry. Round number four is going to be brought to you by our good friends at InVets. If you need a job, that's one thing that Cons talked about from the beginning, like his transition. And actually, one of the questions that we got whenever we wanted to do a little bit of a mailbag was, what was Cons doing in between the time that he left the Army and he started the podcast here on ZBT? Cons?
I wasn't doing anything. No, I transitioned out of the military into the civilian working world, into finance. And that was not something where, and this is true of every veteran, there's not something where you just like have a job waiting for you. They're like, oh, you're a veteran? Oh, we'll hire you. And a lot of companies now have made a concerted effort to hire veterans, but it's still, finding a job is still a very lengthy and can be challenging process. And the hardest thing for vets is... translating their military service and explaining to civilians who have no idea what any of that stuff is, how they can be valuable for their company. So yeah, I just transitioned out and worked like a little old civilian. No big deal.
And a lot of people think that it's almost like an insult to you. Like if you're like, this is the personal perspective. Like I was the company gunnery sergeant of Marine Corps Base Quantico's in Pease. I had 220 Marines. I did this and this and this. And nobody in the civilian world really knows what any of that stuff means. So you need a little help. And that's what InVets does, because there's over 80,000 current job openings in Indiana. And InVets.org is the digital connection point to employers specifically looking for veterans. InVets worked with employers from all industries across the state of Indiana to create a second door in the hiring process specifically for veterans and military, but it's not just for Indiana. They have jobs all over the place where you can go and check that out. Go to invets.org/zero to create a profile and learn more about the Indiana communities. Browse the current job openings in those communities and receive a free t-shirt. That's right, a free t-shirt. And if it's the one that I got, it's a wonderful shirt. It makes my arms pop.
I was wearing mine all weekend. It's soft and cozy. I also love too, like, a lot of military veterans get out, and not everybody has that family back home. Like, not everybody goes back home. They don't quite know where to go. I love that Indiana is, like, opening its arms and saying, come here. We got a shit ton of jobs, and we have InVets that can help you, link you to these jobs. So I like that they're taking the initiative. It's smart. Bring veterans into your state. Good stuff.
And Kate and I have talked about this when we've traveled different places. Like, I think we've gone a couple places where we've actually done this together, San Francisco being one, where whenever we're on the street, we'll pull up a Zillow app and just see, like, how much houses are in this area. Like, you're going by Stanford University, and you're like, how much is a house here? Oh, you can get an 1,100-square-foot townhouse for, oh,
80 shopping. Million.
$60,000. So if you go to InVets or if you go to Indiana on your Zillow account, look at what size house you can get for $250,000 in Indiana. It's going to be one of the best spots in the country. If you're getting out and you want to start over, start in a place where your money makes you, there is levels to it. That's the reason why I'm still in San Antonio. I don't live in New York. The amount of money that they'd have to pay me to move to New York to live the same quality of life, I am not worth that. So they wouldn't do it. I love staying here for that reason. Indiana is another great spot. Go to invets.org. Check it out. Do something for yourself. That's invets.org/zero. Get a free shirt. If anything, you're going to get a free shirt out of it. Round number four. This one, I love this story because this one, this lady is the oldest living Marine, and she proudly wore the service's Eagle Globe and Anchor as she celebrated her 107th birthday. Now, you can't see the picture because, spoiler alert, this is an audio podcast. But in her picture, she's wearing the very traditional, old-school World War II veteran. Not just hat, but it's the piss cover that she's wearing. Veterans, old veterans wearing the piss cover. Oh, man, that thing just makes my heart melt. I love it. I just want to give Dorothy a hug, but Dorothy looks like a kind of person who's not going to accept a hug. She is a hardcore veteran, and you could tell just by looking at her. She's grizzly.
Yeah, very much so. She doesn't look 107 either. I got to give her that.
No.
You know, she doesn't look at all.
She was actually born on September 19th, 1913 in Warren, PA. You know about Warren, PA, Kate?
I do not. I'll have to look it up. I'll have to look up and see. Okay. But the best Marines come from Pennsylvania.
That is not true. A service video showed her wearing her Marine Corps League attire from a detachment 1175 in Concord, North Carolina. She enlisted in the Marines immediately after December 17, 1941, also known as the attack on Pearl Harbor. She said everyone was out doing something. The women were helping the Red Cross, even in churches. They were knitting things. So I decided I wanted to do something. I would go into the Marine Corps. Cole was a part of a program called the Female Integration into some fields that allowed more men to serve in combat roles in the Pacific, because it was something that was widely needed. And I think that that is a beautiful story. And I'm really excited about some of that stuff, because there's going to be a new League of Their Own show that's coming out, which I think is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it was kind of like, you know, the Rosie the Riveter, women taking all these jobs that traditionally were for men back home in the civilian front so that those men could be freed up to join the military and go to war. That same thing was within the Marine Corps. There were jobs that women took over to free up the men to go do what they had to do, that kind of stuff, which for back then was a huge deal and was so desperately needed. So very cool. Probably the adventure of a lifetime especially
and,
back then.
And just 25 years before that, it was the first time that a woman was in the Marine Corps, with Opha Mae Johnson joining in 1918. And they, 2 years before that, women had gained the right to vote nationally, according to the World War I Centennial Commission. And currently, about 8.4 of the 185,000 strong corps are women, which I think they're going to be more. I think they're actually looking to up that number, which they definitely should.
They should. It's been a minute. Hand up.
I did not know. I did not know the Marine Corps only had 185,000 Marines.
Oh yeah, small. More deaths in COVID than the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That's
anyway,
a fun
no, but you have to give her so much. You have to give her so much credit for doing something back then when no one else. That didn't seem like a viable option for many. I'm sure that say like, yeah, you know what? I'll go join the military as a female.
Absolutely.
So the fact that was her choice is very admirable.
Definitely took a special type of woman, and lots of people were taking to Facebook to wish Cole a happy, wonderful birthday and thanking her to help open the military to all of us women to follow. So yes, big thank you to her. Semper Fidelis and happy birthday, Maya.
One last note before we go there. At 107, do you think you give the first shit about people giving you a happy birthday on Facebook? I don't.
At 107, do you know what Facebook is?
Hell yes, I would. Hell yes. I'm going to be like that all the way till the end. Somebody like my thing?
Dorothy ripping cigs, taking a long swig off of her old granddad 114 whiskey bonded, and she's just like, oh, cool, another Facebook message came in. Because you know she's been smoking for like 80 years.
Yeah.
Ripping heaters. All right, let's move into Kate's interview with Danny Trejo. Here it is.
We are joined today by Danny Trejo on Zero Blog 30. I would say unofficial Los Angeles diplomat doing so much good. I'm scrolling through your Twitter and I see coronavirus safety and voting rights PSAs, addiction and recovery seminars, animal welfare and adoption. You're feeding the hungry. You're highlighting Latino culture and talent. And overall, safe to say you're an American icon in our book over here at Zero Blog 30. But you also have so much other stuff going on top of that. Your feature documentary, Inmate Number One, The Rise of Danny Trejo. It follows your path of an early life of drugs, armed robbery, hard prison time to the red carpets of Hollywood. And I think a lot of military veterans can relate to that before and after kind of lifestyle. So similar vibe. Now, you also have Trejo's Tacos, Recipes and Stories from LA, a cookbook with over 70 different recipes in it that goes along with all these cool stories. And what we're really excited to talk to you about, yeah, there it is, Trejo's Tacos. And you have many stores all over where people can get those delicious tacos, but they can make them themselves thanks to your book. But one of the coolest things I was reading about, the Everest Foundation has teamed up with the Westside VA to bring you and your famous tacos to feed homeless veterans living on their VA campus, which is a huge treat. So
this Thursday, we got 500 bowls of delicious food.
And how did that come about? How did you link up with them?
They contacted us. We've been feeding like a lot of the hospitals, you know, it's so beautiful. It's like we were feeding a hospital in Glendale, and two nurses literally started crying because we were giving them food, and these two were sleeping in their cars because they didn't want to, you know, go into their house after work. And you know, I was like, you guys are saving lives, you know, we're just giving up food. It was like, it's unbelievable.
But that's a lot. I mean, you're doing it for hospitals and for all sorts of people doing good things, and now you're feeding hundreds of veterans with like legitimately good, you know, there's people have great intentions and everything, and there's lots of like good canned food drives and stuff, but it's different when somebody's actually putting their heart and soul into the food and the people receiving it can tell, oh, this person really cared. This is really delicious and amazing stuff. Why do you go out of your way to do these things?
I owe quite a bit. Yeah, that's all. It's like just, you know, I wasn't like a model citizen before I got clean. And so I just, I don't condemn anybody that doesn't have the time to help because they don't owe. But I owe my life, you know, and I talked to God a couple of days ago and I asked him, how am I doing? He said, you're almost out of hell. Keep it up.
You're close. You're so close. And that is a neat talk. Like, you know, your feature documentary, Inmate Number One, The Rise of Danny Trejo.
And it's kind of the story of this incredible transformation and a reminder to everybody that it's never too late to switch things up, to turn things around. And again, you know, even me before I joined the military, I was on a bit of a rough path and it totally flipped and changed my life. I think so many, especially on the enlisted side, can relate with your story. Can you give a quick background on where you were and how it flipped?
So, you know, like I'm writing a book, me and a guy, Donald Logue, who's also real close with veterans and an actor. We just put together a book and it goes a lot further than the documentary. But you know, I was in doing drugs, alcohol, and basically a taker of anything I could take. And I went to the pen and some circumstances happened in 1968 and I was almost going to the gas chamber. And I just kind of said, you know, God, let me die with dignity. You know, I'll say your name every day and I'll do whatever I can for my fellow man. Well, I thought it was just going to be a couple of years and then they were going to kill me. But the good Lord fooled me and he gave me the rest of my life. And so I owe, you know, I owe. It wasn't the kind of deal I made to don't let me get in trouble. It was let me die.
But you know, you put some prayers up there, but it also took a lot of hard work and a lot of initiative and saying, you know what, here's the path I want to take. It's not a traditional path. How did you, like, because we also talk about military veterans get out of their time in service. And no, it's not the same as prison. And no, it's not the same. Well, sort of. There's a lot of cleaning. There's a lot of, some might say it's pretty similar. But you get out and you're kind of like, you're in this very specific institution. You get out and you go, well, now what the hell do I do? Do you have any advice for people in that boat?
I was so, so blessed that when I was 15 years old, I accidentally walked into a 12-step program meeting. We thought it was a party. There's about 20 of us. That was a party and busted in and we got this greeting, but that was my first introduction to it. And then throughout my journey through prison, I kept running into these same 12-step programs, right? And I went to one when I was in the pen to see the girls. Somebody told me there was girls. I put my name down. And the problem with that was that all the rest of the time I went to prison, my name was on that.
Yep.
So they kept sending me. And I, you know, I finally, it's like, wait a minute. I heard this message of, you know, there's a better way. And I think one of the things that kept me on the right path, the path of redemption, not a banging a tambourine or not, just the path of my redemption was to stay around people that were trying to stay clean, trying to stay sober, trying to have a better life, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I had a friend of mine, another Danny, who was in the military, and he stayed with us for a long time. And then that he got away from us and his that PhD, or I forget what it is.
PTSD. Yeah.
You know, and so, and now, you know, I've been trying to get him back, you know, and it's like, because, you know, veterans, they have special problems, but if you stay in the today, you know, and you seem to do a lot better, you know, like I said, I don't drink, I don't use drugs. And a lot of the medications that people need, you know, it's like, you have to take them and that's fine. You know, that's what keeps us going. And some people, well, I don't want to take the meds. Well, you're an idiot.
Yeah. They keep me ticking along just fine, I'll tell you that much. But that too, so when you got out and you're on this new path, how did you fall into, because I think so many people look at the creative life and a life of acting and they think, well, that's awesome, but I could never do that. Like, did you have that feeling of being overwhelmed or you just went for it?
You know what? No, you know, everything good that has happened to me has happened as a direct result of helping someone else. And I was working with this one, I still work for Western Pacific Med Corp, which is detoxes heroin addicts. I still work for, I've been there 50 years. And I was working with this one kid that got me involved with this agency that sent out extras, you know,
and
we went on this one film. And on this, I was just going to hang out with this kid, really. and And I was his counselor, and to make 50 bucks, they were paying 50 bucks to look like a convict, you know what I mean? And on this one movie called Runaway Train, I ran into a friend of mine that I was in prison with, a guy named Eddie Bunker. Mm-hmm. And I didn't recognize him at first, and he came up and said, "Hey, you're Danny Trejo." I go, "Yeah." He said, "Danny, I saw you win the lightweight and the welterweight title up in San Quentin." I said, "You're Eddie Bunker." And we started like talking. And he says, "Are you still boxing?" I go, "Hell no, I'm 40 years old, Eddie. I don't get hit in the face no more." And he said, "You know what? We need somebody to train one of the actors how to box." And I said, "What's it pay?" Because they were giving me 50 bucks for just acting like a convict. You know? And it's funny because me and Eddie laughed because we've been doing that.
Yeah, well, we got that down. We've been doing that for free for a while.
For free, you know? And, right. And he said, "They're paying $320 a day." And my immediate thought was, "How bad do you want this guy beat up?" You know, I thought he was mad at somebody. You know, and he goes, no, you got to be real careful. This actor's real high strung, Danny. He might sock you.
Yeah.
I says, "Eddie, for $320 bucks, give him a stick. Are you crazy?"
I mean, you can beat me up.
I started training an actor named Eric Roberts how to box for a movie called Runaway Train.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how you got your foot in the door. And from there, you just kept staying in that
director,
world.
The director saw that I could handle Eric. And all of a sudden, I'll never forget, it was Andrei Kajalowski. He's a Russian aristocrat and very diplomatic. He talked like if he was praying to you, and he, real soft-spoken. He goes, "Danny, you be in movie. And you fight Eric in movie, and you be my friend." Well, if you come from a prison background, you get a little skeptical when somebody says you be my friend.
Right. What do you
and
mean?
He leans over and he kisses me on both cheeks and walks away. And I say, "Hey, Eddie, I'm going to train the kid for $320, but if I'm going to have to kiss that old man, I'm going to want money." And he goes, "No, he's European." That's when I found out Europeans kiss. So it was like, that was it. He gave me lightning in a bottle. And I, from there, the first 5 years of my career, I think I played inmate number one. Mm-hmm. That's why I named the documentary Inmate Number One, because I was always, every time I'd walk on a movie, the first thing the director would say, "Take off your shirt," because of that big tattoo. And he'd say, "Danny, say something prisony." I go, "We'll kill all of you." "Great."
Perfect. He's so good.
Where did you study?
San Quentin, little acting school called San Quentin. Kind of a big deal.
Actually, that was my I think my on the job training. You know, the first movie I ever did where I had a name was Art Sanella in Death Wish 4 with Charles Bronson.
Yeah. And then, you know, the years go by and there you are in Machete. There you are in 95 in Heat with Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, of all people. I mean, you stuck with it and holy crap. Next thing you know, I mean, things really start happening.
My dogs just decided they wanted to visit. I came when I did Heat with Robert De Niro and Al Pacino and Val Kilmer. That really, you know, pushed my stock up quite a bit. For working with those guys, it was amazing. I mean, all I did was stare at Robert De Niro, like, wow.
There then he is.
I'd made it, you know, and then when he did Machete for me, it was like amazing to see that guy on a movie that I was the lead. And it was hard to say you're the lead when Robert De Niro's on this show, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he would always say, you, number one. You know, all the coffee, number one. And all I could say was, can I get you some coffee, Mr. De Niro?
As you're the lead in the movie there. Like, let me step aside from the set for a second. Get you a coffee.
And it was so amazing. Him, Jeff Fahey, that me and Jeff were still really, really close friends. And I had my son, he was 9 then, Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on the set with me and I introduced him to Robert De Niro. I said, "Gilbert, this is Robert De Niro. Bob, this is my son, Gilbert." He goes, "Hi, Gilbert." My son goes, "Are you talking to me?" And Robert, and then he laughed. And I said, Gilbert, you didn't see that movie. Goes, no, the Comedy Channel did. You know, and it's like, so him and Robert became really, really good friends. You know, so.
That's awesome. And again, one of those probably experiences where you have to pinch yourself. You're like, is my son going toe-to-toe with Robert De Niro right now? With like, yeah, wow, this is real life.
And funny, when we did Machete, I was having dinner with Robert De Niro. So my kids were now like 16. So, hey, be cool, guys. You know, we're having dinner with Robert De Niro. And Robert De Niro asked me about some French director, right? And mm-hmm. I'm not a student of film. I just get in front of the camera and act mean. You know what I mean? And my son was. So my son knew who he was talking about. The rest of the evening was him and my son discussing the theory of, and I'm like playing with my fork, me and my daughter, you know, like.
We'll see the dessert menu, I guess, while those two are, yeah.
It was amazing. So.
Those two were meant to be.
My son just directed me in a film called From a Son, which is quite a.
Wow, that's got to be a feeling too. And so it's in the family. And this is a great lesson. There's a lot of great lessons in your story, but one, I think so much of it too is applicable to the veteran community. Everything good that has come your way, you say, has happened as a direct result of doing good for others. And that is such a huge, one of my first opportunities here came, I joined a volunteer group when I got out of the military. And they were looking for people who wanted to be in a program at The Daily Show at Jon Stewart. And so I was like, oh yeah. And next thing you know, you do good things. And it's all about then you start meeting good people and good people have great connections. And so much good does come from that. That's such a great lesson. And then also too, biding your time. You said it wasn't right off the bat. You get out and you want to hit the ground running. For years, you were inmate number one. And that was it. And that was a long time.
When I first got out of the pen, I knew that I had to be good. And I'm in my neighborhood. And I didn't understand. I broke into every house in that neighborhood. I robbed most of the people. So there wasn't no big welcome home when I got there.
Oh, Danny's back. Great.
In 1969, I was standing in front of my mom's. And that's when they used to put all the trash in a big bucket or a big tea, and they drag it out the street. And I seen one of the ladies drag it, and I went to help her. Her words were, "No me robas, Danny." And I said, shut up. And I grabbed her trash and I brought it out. And then I went to the backyard to get the other one. She never took her eyes off me because she knew I was going to break and rob her lawnmower, steal something.
Right.
And that's what I started doing. I just started taking out people's trash, anything, just to, you know, just to do good. And it just became a habit. Everybody that I know that I choose to call friends and that I love carry thermal underwear, socks, old clothes in their trunk of their car. And we just give it to the homeless. And you'd be surprised how many homeless veterans there are downtown in LA. Every time we go, it's like you tell them they're trying to keep their little place, you know, right. You know,
right.
And we've got to do something. So we feed them all the time just because. Yeah, they put their lives on the line. You guys do. You put your lives on the line.
And I don't know if you could or not. I mean, you say you see a lot of homeless veterans. Do you have any thoughts as to like why do you think that is? Or,
but you, I'll tell you something. That a lot of Governor Reagan, when he was president, he closed all the mental health facilities and said, "Okay, we're going to take care of these people on the streets." But then they never put anything on the streets.
Right.
So all these people were on the streets. We've got families, literally generations of people that have been, that's their home.
Right. They don't know any other way.
They've been there 20 years and they've got children that they've had on, you know, and it's so we are the richest country in the world. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got people that have kept us rich, you know, fighting wars that are homeless. And it's like so sad. So it's like funny, me and Mario Castillo. And here's a guy I met when I was doing a movie called Blood In, Blood Out. He was in San Quentin. I was an actor in San Quentin. Mm-hmm. And I talked about staying clean when he got out. He went to a program and then he got sick. So I helped him out and we stayed together and like now he's an assistant of mine, and we were passing out Pampers, because every time we pass out food, all the girls with kids will, do you have any Pampers? And I'm wondering, what the hell? What's so, what the, I didn't know Pampers were that expensive.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
So I went and bought 150 boxes of Pampers and almost took my life savings. I said, what? You know, like, but you forget kids use 8 Pampers a day. They're not like, you just use one. So we're passing out Pampers, and I'll never get, Mario says, man, we better never go back to the joint. I go, why? He says, they'd give us a nickname like Huggy. Hey, Huggy.
Yeah, you can't go back with a diaper nickname. That's not going to go over well.
You know, if you go back for stealing bikes, they'll call you Sprocket. You know,
exactly. We'd be Huggy. You know? You got to stay on the up and up there. You got to stay after that you're donezo. But I just have to say, you're clearly, you know, scrolling your social media, and I wrote about a blog for you for the site here when the word about your documentary was first coming out, and when the trailer for it came out, I was like, I cannot wait to see this. And I think it is so worthwhile for anybody to see, whether you served or not, if you're feeling a little bit lost and you don't know what next steps to take with your life, or you feel like maybe you've messed up and how can I move forward? Definitely check out Inmate Number One, The Rise of Danny Trejo. And also too, how did you get so into cooking? Like, you have taco shops, Trejo's Tacos, and then the donuts. How did that all come about?
You know, remember I told you, everything good that has happened to me has happened as a direct result of helping someone else.
Yes.
My agent, Gloria, and you got to listen to people, you know, but anyway, so my agent, Gloria, she was trying to get me to do this movie, and it was a low, no budget movie. And they're kind of trying to get me to do this other one, these people over here, for good money, you know, and I'm trying to point to this one, and she's saying, you know what, Danny, we gotta, and again, so we did this director a favor, a guy named Craig Moss. He had a no budget movie, you know, and it's kind of they'll give you lunch per diem money to get there.
Right.
But on this movie, it was called Badass, and it was actually about a Vietnam vet, about a veteran, and who kind of stood up for somebody on a bus, and so I did it, and on it, I meet this producer. His name's Ash Shaw, and he's seen that I like good food. I don't like eating processed food, and even like all our food at our restaurants, you know, we're real careful with it, what it is. And so this movie, first of all, turned into a trilogy. So she was right. And then this producer on the first one said, why don't you start a restaurant, Danny? Jokingly, I said, Trejo's Tacos, right?
Yeah.
So we did Badass 2, and then Badass on the Bayou. And he brought me a business plan. So the business plan, it didn't have 2 killings in the first page. So I gave it to my agent. Right away.
Where's the death? Where's the blood? Yeah.
And so she just kind of said, hey, this is a no brainer. We have to do this. And
right.
So if it wasn't for her, I would, you know, so everything else is just the way it works. You know, I did a favor for a director, and made more money than I would have with my decision, you know? So, cause right. Like I said, it was a trilogy. So Badass did really well. Mm-hmm. Badasses did twice as good. And Badass on the Bayou with Danny Glover did about 4 times as good. So, okay. All right, Gloria.
All right, Gloria was right. And so, hey, a movie about a veteran doing something good and you doing that movie to do a good thing led you to Trejo's Tacos. And now you're feeding veterans over at the Westside VA. You're feeding your famous Trejo's Tacos. So the good just keeps going.
We've got 7 restaurants, and we've been staying afloat through the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We even got a restaurant at the airport, like the Puck guy, he's got one. We got one. That makes you like a real restaurateur.
Yeah. And it makes you part of, like I said before, you are like, I would say like the diplomat of Los Angeles. You look anything involving the city, I'm like, oh, there's Danny Trejo.
My daughter came and she was in Ohio. She came in and she goes, Dad, I landed in the airport and I heard your voice saying, hi, Welcome to my Los Angeles.
You're the mayor. You're the unofficial mayor, I would say, of the town.
I think Garcetti. I love Garcetti. He's awesome, man. And wear a mask because our mayor says so. You know?
Oh, God. Danny Trejo said that. Put your mask on. Hurry up. Machete.
I wear a mask everywhere. Outside, I always got a mask on. Hey!
Got mine right here. Wear it 24-7 here in New York City. But, Danny, I cannot thank you enough for your time. Again, his book, Trejo's Tacos, Recipes and Stories from L.A. is out. And, I mean, that has over 75 recipes of your favorites. And I love seeing, too, you retweet people actually make them, and they look amazing. They look so good. I'm going to have to go out and get this book myself. That has to be so gratifying, too, to see people actually making your recipes.
I have, it's so funny. I didn't know the kind of, but I have such a wide variety of people that come up and hand me this book. The sign.
Yeah.
Looking at them.
Whoa. All right.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's a great thing. You have the documentary Inmate Number One, The Rise of Danny Trejo. And then the Everest Foundation is working with you to feed homeless veterans at the VA campus out in LA. Trejo's Tacos for the vets. I think that's such an awesome thing. Is there anything else that you have? I mean, a stupid question. You have so many things in the works, but is there anything else you want to?
I got a record label, Trejo's Music, that's doing really well. I started that to help this mother who was, her daughter wanted to be a singer. She was in a battered woman shelter. And we're trying to help her. And now her daughter's doing an album for us. So, just everything that I do kind of turned out to just help somebody. So I just want to keep doing that. And I have a little fighter. Her name is Senisha Estrada. She's 108 pounds. I sponsored her, and she went to Mexico because they needed money to go to Mexico. And she won the WBC champ of the world. And then on the Canelo undercard, she won the WBA champ of the world and stole the show. And she, 108 pounds, boxing gloves weigh more than her, I think. Yeah, but boy, she can fight. So.
Yeah,
I love to see people successful at what they do, and maybe you can help them, you know.
Love each other and eat tacos, damn it. That's all we can say.
I got a t-shirt that says, don't be negative, eat a taco.
I'm going to get one. I'm going to get the cookbook, all that good stuff. And vote, for the love of God, vote. That's another thing, too. Danny Trejo on Zero Block 30, thank you so, so much for joining us and for everything that you do for the people in L.A. And all over the place, and especially for the veterans coming up with those delicious tacos. So thank you. Thank you very much.
You know what? It isn't. And I'm going to the Wounded Warriors Foundation for something. I don't know.
Ah, it's another really good thing I'm doing. You know, the usual.
God bless you, okay?
Yeah, the same to you. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
I was excited to do this. I had actually just a couple months ago written a blog about him and this documentary coming out about him. And the more I fell into a rabbit hole learning about him, the more I was like, Danny Trejo is fucking awesome. So it was great to actually get to interview him. Very cool.
That is awesome. All right, let's move into round number 6. This one is a very typical ZBT story on the 300th edition. The U.S. Army has replaced the chaotic reception recruits entering basic training have long received from shouting drill and sergeants with training event designed to create a bond with their teammates and leaders. Now, I do think that coronavirus plays a huge part in this type of thing. I think because you have to look at it and see how are we going to adjust. And we see that in pictures and documentaries, essentially, that are coming out from all the different academies, from Marine Corps boot camp to Air Force boot camp and all those things, of the typical, whether it's a technical instructor here at Lackland with the Air Force, or whether it's a chief, or whether it's a gunnery sergeant at the Marine Corps, you always see an enlisted leader yelling in the faces of brand new recruits. You can't do that in coronavirus. You just can't. And you have to look at it and say, how are we going to change the way that we're doing that? The Army came up with a way to do it. I lost it. My sheet just went out. All right. The Army came out with a way to do it. They said on day one of Army basic combat training, it's always been a rite of passage that involved menacing groups of drill drill sergeants, descending on a terrified recruit, yelling commands, and ordering trainees to perform push-ups and other exercises with packed duffel bags and strapped to their backs. We've all seen those videos. I mean, I love them. Personally, about once every 6 months or so, I'll fall into a deep boot camp rabbit hole where I'll look for a drill instructor singing cadence or yelling at recruits or something like that.
Well, there's a real and it just famous makes my one. Heart smile. There's a real famous video that goes viral every year or so of that one lone recruit standing right inside. There's the yellow footprints on Paris Island. And then that building, you go through these big golden doors, the Eagle Globe and Anchor, and that's where they really get you. And there's this one recruit kind of standing there. And then all of a sudden, like, seven drill instructors descend upon him. And they're jumping
on... They sound like hyenas.
Right, and they're jumping on the tables. They're above him. They're below him. They're side... They, like, come... Like Forrest Gump describing the rain, how it came from every direction. It was coming up from below. Like, they... yeah. They just came out of nowhere, and they call it in the military like a shark attack style. And basically, yeah, like several of them descend upon you like you're a piece of meat, and they just tear you apart.
The best comments on those videos whenever it goes viral, Kate, you remember? Do you know?
I would never let a drill instructor do that to me.
I wish a motherfucker would punch him in the face.
Get him right in his nose. So, yeah.
So the Army's actually going to switch it up. Drill sergeants were charged with evaluating trainees' ability to handle stress, singling out and perceived undesirables by enveloping them in a manner that emulated a shark attack. This activity, however, does not instill the spirit of the infantry. It betrays the innate trust between teammates and, worse, betrays the crucial bond of trust with the leaders. Do you guys agree with that?
I feel like I just don't even know because I don't know any other way. But there were times where in my head I was like, I feel like I would have been just as good a Marine without some of that. Like, I feel like, okay, I get it. You're yelling. But like, once you get the game of it, you're like, all right, this seems a little unnecessary. But
and I do appreciate the way that I can only speak the way the Marines do it, where you are treated like a big piece of shit until you're done with the crucible. And once you do that, you stop calling your drill instructors sir or ma'am. You start calling them by their rank and last name. And I think that that's appropriate. Like, you have to earn the right, like, and show that you are worth your salt and you're able to do that. I don't know if you could take all of that stuff away, because I do think that stress-induced environments is something that you have got to experience. It can't be the first time you're doing it in combat. You have to know how you're going to react under pressure. And sure, having somebody yell at you in your face is not the same as bullets coming at your face. Like, it's not the same thing, but it does – you can think you can respond under stress. I think that is valuable.
You do learn to slow your mind down,
Yeah, you're not going to just start taking live rounds at boot camp and just start, instead of screaming at people, shooting at them. But Kate, you make a good point. You kind of keep doing things until you learn, so to speak, how to play the game, right? And then that's really what Chaps is talking about here. That game is, how do I slow my mind down to do the right thing, even though this dude with horrible breath is screaming in my face right now?
Oh, they do have bad breath, too. It's either Monster or fucking coffee. Soaked. So this new training exercise is designed to put new trainees through a series of physical and mentally challenging events that will build an initial foundation of, quote, belief in oneself, belief in your teammates, and a belief in the leaders with whom they serve. Excellent use of whom there, by the way. Platoons then conduct the events from the new Army Combat Fitness Test, which is scheduled to replace the APFT. They do the leg tuck, the hand release, all that bullshit. And the platoons that fail to obtain the highest score will be given an appropriate corrective training exercise. So I think that means there's still room for some yelling. And I love it. That's because what else could the corrective training exercise be? That's how you correct.
Well, it looks like quizzes. Here they're going to be doing the drill sergeants will quiz trainees about info they learned in the reception station and dole out. Yeah, it's a quiz. Pop quiz.
They're also going to be.
What is a vulva? What is a vulva?
I think that it's funny that in articles like this, they're like, they're going to be instructed to retrieve their baggage. Like, somebody's just like, hi, recruit. Can you go get your bag? Like, no, that's not how it's going to go. Go get your fucking pack right now. I guess they don't cuss anymore, right? They're not allowed to cuss anymore.
They're not allowed to cuss even?
No.
Come on.
Even when I went to boot camp, the drill instructors weren't technically allowed to cuss.
They were allowed to call my mom a whore, so...
Yeah, I used to think that was actually an integrity violation by my drill instructors, because that was... Remember, when I first joined, I was big-time Bible chaps, and that's who I thought...
Oh, yeah.
Whenever I was thinking, you're constantly teaching us about integrity, But as soon as the lieutenant or series commander or company commander comes around, you stop cussing at us and start using frickin' and dang instead of fucking and damn. Like, that, how is that integrity? If you're supposed to be doing what you're supposed to be doing, even if nobody's watching, you should never be cussing, drill instructor. That's what I thought in my mind. And little did I know, I was a little pea-brained idiot.
Indeed.
Yeah, so that's that story. I think it's going to work out okay. I think that you do have to change with... Because there's a lot of parents that don't yell anymore. Like, you really try not to. I think that this generation, if you come through, and you just sound like such an old head. Even as I'm saying it, you sound like such an old person. You're like, this generation just can't handle it. That's every single generation before the next one.
Outside the military, I feel like if, and even in the military, like, boot camp's different. But once you're out in the fleet, if you are the one who's always yelling and screaming, I feel like you're just not a very good leader. Like, if you have to yell all the time, like, you've lost control, and that's your only way to try and get it back is to be yelling and screaming all the time. So I don't really respect the over-yellers. And no, trust me, it's a treat to see now and then. Like, looking out your barracks window because you hear someone getting yelled at is a delight. But if it's overkill...
It definitely needs to happen from time to time if you do something ridiculous. But yes, I agree. Fear is not an effective personality trait, nor is it an effective leadership trait.
So when you have that one that can really, really do it, though, like if you have that skill where you can just scream at somebody and insult them and rip them to absolute shreds, and you only pull it out of your pocket like once every 6 months or so, but once you do it, everybody's looking at the dust that's coming out of your pocket. That's just it's a military leadership chef kiss.
Ended horribly, but my ex could really yell at Marines. And
can I tell a very can I tell a quick story about a time in the military when I saw someone yell at someone else? Or actually, I didn't see it. I actually could only hear it, but it really affected me. And I had gotten into some things at school where I had to be in this program, and my mentor in the program, you had to have a mentor. My mentor was a major, and the tactical officer who I had to report to was a captain. So at the end of the program, they had to meet, and I was sitting outside the office, and the door was very thick. You could not hear what was going on. I was sitting right next to the door. You could not hear a single thing that was being said in that office. However, I later found out that the captain said something to the major, and the major was, beyond just being a mentor, he was a friend of mine. He was a former player, so, I mean, he was close to the program and helped us out a lot.
Fraternization noted.
Yeah. But I heard, then all of a sudden, the captain said something, and this is not just for football, I think this is sports in general. He said to the major, I don't think you learn anything about leadership from playing sports, which, I mean, there are just so many books and people outside the military who would disagree with that. That got the major to scream so loud and dress down this captain in his own office that I will always remember hearing that and just thinking about how emasculating that is to get yelled at in your office. You're in your own office and someone comes in, obviously outranks you, so you have to just take it. He couldn't fight back, but he just had to take it in his office. And I still hope to God I run into that gentleman one day. I'm not a grudge holder. I've never been a grudge holder.
I play football, you bitch! Football's leadership!
No,
this recruit football is very much leadership for me! Football!
All right, let's move into Sabra. Alibis, a surprise for the squad. I brought in young Radio Bren for some Sabra alibis. Wow. Welcome back to the show, Bren. How have you been, pal?
How is everybody? Can you hear me? How's my audio?
It's fabulous.
Sounded good.
All right, great.
So we had Bren. Bren is the longest tenured producer on the show by far. He is with us forever. He's doing stuff with Barstool Game Time now. We wanted to bring him on. What's been going on with you, Bren?
When I say that my life has flipped upside down in the last 6 months, it's kind
He's got a super hottie girlfriend who's like super hottie.
I know. Super hottie girlfriend.
And you guys are going to laugh at me. I mean, I don't know how much you guys know about this, but essentially what happened to me is that I changed bases, found a girlfriend, borderline, like for military purpose, got married, and then moved into a new house.
Yeah. Got BAH. Congrats.
Yeah, pretty much like, and then, yeah, so I'm in this new spot working with the Game Time stuff, which is a ton of fun, right up my alley. And I miss you guys a lot. There was a ton of stories watching, like, as I was transitioning, I was like, wow, I really would like to be in the room listening to you guys talk about the Roosevelt story. There was a ton of Mattis stuff that was going on. Did they ever find the two rifles?
No.
Never even found the rifle, so that's still going
still
on.
Still going on. But we just wanted everyone to know you have a super hottie girlfriend.
Yeah,
thank you. That was actually, I swear to God, so Thursday was the first day that I had been in the office since March. Like, literally, I think it was almost 6 months to the day that I had been at home. And then Kelly Martin, I said hi to Kelly Martin in the hallway, and she's like, she stopped me. She told me how beautiful my girlfriend was. And
I know.
And it, like, made my day.
Crushing it.
So, like, to hear you guys say that, the first thing on screen was like, wow, I think I actually did something right.
You know what? I'm just going to say it. You're welcome. You're welcome, kid. You have us to thank for that.
What?
We put him in a position with all of our leadership.
Get out
of here. Typical officer.
Classic Cons.
Yeah. And I won't lie. I texted this to Cons a couple weeks ago because me and my girlfriend went to a function, and I was taking pictures, and Khan's ringing in the back of my head not to put my fucking hands in my pockets while I'm taking pictures. Well, actually kind of annoying.
There you go. Like,
okay, did you have an umbrella?
Did not have an umbrella.
Good. Well, we'll give you a chance. Any save rounds, alibis?
Common Man Cup this week. Follow Barstool Game Time on Twitter, Twitch, Instagram. It's a lot of fun. We're running a tournament this week and a ton of other stuff. And please keep download, subscribe, review to Zero Block 30. Glad you guys are still sticking around. Hi to everybody and all the listeners. I'm not dead.
He's not dead.
I'm on a different base.
He's on a different base and a new MOS. We appreciate you, Brent. Thanks for joining us, man. Kyle, we'll move on to you.
Love you guys.
Any safe rounds for you, Kyle?
For me, I have a few. Slovenia. Don't give us a geology lesson here.
Yeah, we don't care about that.
Right.
We don't care. Any geo, just mind your own fucking business. Mm-hmm. That's really all I got. Happy 300th episode, sort of. I did want to say we've had a lot more than 300 because there was some number fuckage going on. Didn't really get
Classic.
It right.
I think around like 190, we did like 190.2, 190.4 because we kept forgetting that it was like a big one coming up. Yeah, that's okay.
299.5. So, you know, nothing's changed, I guess.
Nothing's changed.
But appreciate you guys keeping me around and let me fuck around on the
Buddy,
the
we'd
show
be lost without you. That is for damn
sure.
I don't know what we do. We would be completely fucked, to put it nicely.
that's all I got.
All right, Cons, we'll go to you. What do you got?
Let me just say thank you. To you chaps for starting the show, for thinking enough of me to keep having me on those first few episodes. And then,
oddly, my first tweet about ZBT was, first guest, we have West Point grad, no big deal. And I didn't even make fun of it at all. So things have changed a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, thank you, Kate and Kyle, for enhancing the show as you've joined over the years. And then just thank you to everybody who's continued to listen. Anybody who's listened from episode one, wow, that's awesome. And anyone who shared the show with their friends or family and responded. And, you know, the thing that I always get really excited about now is when we ask for submissions or questions or anything, we get flooded with so many submissions that we can't even read them all a lot of times. And I just remember the days when we would ask for questions like that and we'd get like two responses. Mm-hmm. So just to see how this thing has grown into a voice in the military is pretty cool. So just thank you to everybody.
No doubt. Kate?
Yeah, solid agree. Huge thank you to the listeners. My favorite people around about to meet are ZBT listeners. And I love any interactions that we have with people. The DMs that I get, I love to hear from people. And I just am so grateful to, like, we're here because you're sitting there wherever you are listening to us, and appreciate it so much, whether you served or not. So huge, huge, huge thank you to everybody who supports us. And then second, I would say where we are going forward. I know one thing we were talking about is representing more diversity in upcoming interviews and finding more unique voices from across the military. So if you know people who are doing really interesting stuff, hit us up. looking for people of a wider array of backgrounds and all that stuff. We're going to definitely work on that as a goal moving forward to represent more voices in the coming episodes that are ahead. And just really grateful for this fucking show, man. It's a delight. So huge thank you to everybody, especially the squad. And I love my son Spork, my cat. That's all.
Stop DMing us that you want a Navy person on the show.
We will never. Just kidding.
Yeah, that's just not gonna happen.
I have so many submarine questions.
Yeah, we're never.
Go read a book about submarines.
That's a shame. We're never gonna answer those. Last note, I would say that I am incredibly proud of my Marine Corps career. Looking back, I think that there's certain things in my life that I'll look at and hang my hat on that I did and did pretty well. I think I'll be able to look back at my time in the Marine Corps. I think I'll be able to look back at my relationship with my wife and my kids. And I think I'll be able to look back at this show and be proud of it and what we represent. Because a lot of times there is such a toxic environment around veterans where they can look, it looks just bad, like on social media. Sometimes the worst examples of who we are the loudest. And I want to give credit to those who follow us on social, who interact with us on social. If you look at a lot of the other large military accounts, our comments, our interactions don't look the same. Like the people, you people who are listening, you people who comment, are a good representation of what the military actually is like, that you can go in and you can find good people that care about folks all along the way. And I think that's what separates the military from a lot of folks, is that deep down, a majority of the people who are serving really do care about the American to their left or right. And we want to make sure that we are amplifying those voices, no matter race, color, creed, sexual orientation, that the military represents all of those things. And social change happens, and it has happened in the history of this country through the military, whether it be black veterans after World War II and the integration there, or now with gay veterans coming out and having marriage legal for gay people in the military. We need to continue that, going down the path that we're at, and just be better folks, better people. And hopefully we'll learn about that and do that together here on Zero Block 30. Sound the retreat.